I really don't care what anybody says. Today, I am king of the nerds.
The king of the nerds.
Yes. It's a little less like I'm crowning myself and I'm out in front of the SS nerd tannic.
This isn't
going,
like
I'm king of the nerds.
An open challenge like the old King of the Hill game. They're gonna
no, because
you're calling on, you're bringing on nerds, throw me off the hill.
No, it's not a challenge. For today, Becky received her amateur radio license.
Yay!
It's like, that was so much. That's cool. Got somebody to share that hobby with that isn't 9,000 years old. You're listening to Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. As usual, my name is Sam. With me is Mike.
Hey, hey.
Hey, and first time, but a long time listener of the show and a very good friend, Dave. How are you doing?
Excellent. How are you?
No, I am actually really tired. I assume some of you out there today might be in town for Tacoma for the Center for Inquiry, or Inquiry, depending on who you are.
The Summit. Continent you're from.
Yeah, at the Hotel Murano. Which is where I spent most of the last 3 days conducting interview after interview after interview. Please, Mommy, no more interviews. I promise I'll be good. But except for now, because I'm going to have two awesome interviews today. Yeah. All right. As long as I can convince myself. No. But we got so much good material at this conference. So many great voices. Eugenie Scott, a guy I met by the name of Bill Cook, who just has some amazing stories. We're going to be playing these things throughout the next few months because there's just so much material. I really can't keep it in one episode. So what we're probably going to do is just start playing these interviews, one interview a week, as we go. And I think it should be, there's a lot of really interesting stuff there and a lot of names that might surprise you. So,
Glenn Beck.
Yeah, Glenn Beck.
Sean Hannity.
Professes his atheism and his humanism. No, of course not.
Was it Doc Broner?
That would be great. Okay, here's your soap label, go. So in slightly less fun news, you mentioned to me, because I've had my head in a conference the last 3 days.
Yes.
Apparently there's been some interesting stories. And so apparently a pastor was beaten, and heads up to you guys, I have not read this story yet. I know nothing about it, so I'm going to be discovering what's happening as I read it. Here we go. An atheist from Springfield, Ohio, has been charged with felony assault after attacking a local pastor after a church service. James Maxey attended the service at the Bridge Community Church in Northampton, Ohio, with his girlfriend. After the service, he got in an altercation with Reverend Norman Hayes, who reportedly asked Maxey's girlfriend if he abused her. Maxey became enraged and repeatedly punched the pastor in the face. News agencies identified Maxey as a self-described militant atheist on his Facebook account.
I'd just say, first and foremost, if somebody wants to accuse you of being abusive and you want to dispute this, you don't immediately turn to violence.
Yeah, punching, yes. You know, on those tests that you, those multiple choice tests, like when I took one of my school exams, it was like, what is 3 squared? Is it 9? Is it 5? Is it 60? Is it 72,475,683?
Yeah.
None of these. You know, it's like, and he clicked the third one. It's like, what?
This kind of reminds me, I don't know if you guys have seen the movie Death to Smoochie. I think I'm the only person who likes it.
No, it's a great, I like that.
Love that
actually,
movie.
Yeah.
There's a scene where the character of Rainbow Randolph, played by Robin Williams, is being carted away by the police. And a reporter says, Rainbow Randolph, how do you respond to the charges that you're mentally unstable? He's like, who the F said that? And flipping out. This is what this story reminds me of.
Yeah,
this,
wow. Yeah.
And the frustrating thing about this story is that all the major news networks are reporting it as an atheist beat up a pastor, as if that's germane to...
Well, that is what happened here.
It is technically what happened, but more importantly, a guy with a history of violence who's been in and out of jail beat up an old man.
Okay, so here's the thing. There's two sides to that noteworthiness. One, it's atheist beat up pastors, and we're going to be hearing about this for the... Get ready, folks, because you're going to be hearing about this for the next 75 years at least. Oh, atheist beat up pastors all the time. There's the roving gangs of pastor beaters. Expect these stories because they're coming, because this one jerk back, at, you know,
yeah, do we,
50
well,
years ago.
Do we want to take bets on how long it takes for Robertson to pick that up?
The other side of... Oh, he probably already has. The other side of that is... An atheist beating anybody up, kind of noteworthy.
Yeah, it is.
Are you saying we normally lose fights?
Yes, that too. But I'm also mean, you know, somebody if atheists were starting altercations all the time, somebody would be saying something about that, because he didn't say he was an atheist. They researched this guy, found that he was, well, I don't know if he said he was an atheist at the church, but it was about something else. So they researched this guy online, and they go to his Facebook page, and they go, oh, it says militant atheist. And so the press is like, oh, there's news here, an atheist is doing something bad against Christians. So they make a deal out of it. And if this was happening regularly, we'd be hearing about it regularly.
The way I look at this story is that this is a guy with a history of violence who is a registered sex offender, who had sex with a minor, 16-year-old. Yeah. Not cool. History of beating people up.
Right.
He's dating some girl, takes her to a church. Apparently the pastor did not know he was an atheist, didn't know anything about him.
Right.
And just said, oh, is he beating you up, right to his face.
Yeah.
So the pastor's a jerk.
Yeah.
And is weird and presumptuous. Why you would ever say that, especially in...
I don't want to... You know what?
Hold on.
Hang on a second, because
I'm not blaming him.
Yeah, you're not blaming him, but I don't really think that we should be talking about how the pastor's acting at all, because whatever the pastor did, it didn't warrant being punched in the face.
That's about what I was about to say.
Okay.
Is that him being angry is justified.
Yeah.
And we've said that before, that your emotion... In this response to it, yeah, you're angry. I've been there. I've been angry before. But not every action out of justified anger is justified.
Right.
Like, I've been... How many times have we been tabling for a group like Seattle Atheists?
Right.
You sit down and somebody comes up and starts telling you, like, for instance, that you're an angry nihilist who is, like, practically a cannibal. And we've gotten that before multiple times. Not just from conservatives, but liberals, too.
Sometimes a week.
Have you immediately in your head, you're like the Terminator, where you have somebody insult you and you have that list of possible options.
Yeah.
And I've never had
a dating sim.
Exactly. And it's like you're playing a point and click adventure game. It's like, what do you do? And I'm sorry, but physically attack them has never been on my list.
Yeah.
I that's what I get, though, is that, yeah, while this guy's being a jerk, nothing justifies beating a dude down. Like,
hang on.
It was a bad beating. It was like a Joe Pesci beating.
I just want to make it clear. We're not trying to explain away this atheist's behavior. We have always said on the show that atheists are made up of people. So there's going to be an atheist jerk. There's going to be an atheist with a history of violence. There's going to be atheist people who are registered sex offenders, because we come from the human race. We are people. And what I've been telling people in the free thought movement who think like atheists are the best people on earth, I'm like, no, we're not. We're just people.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to make mistakes. We're going to discover people, I guess. So what you brought this story to us. So,
well, and the reason is because it frustrates me that atheist is being plastered all over the story when really that's not it. It's more, there's a guy who has a history of violence who spent 2 years in prison for felony assault before.
Right.
And he, you know, like we said, he has no control over his own violent reactions. And the fact that he's atheist is a non sequitur. It's completely...
Let me ask you two questions.
Two questions.
If this guy, you know, if this altercation happened and... we went to his Facebook page. The journalist went to his Facebook page and said he was a militant Hindu. Do you think they would be giving it as much attention?
I don't think so.
I'd believe the militant part.
Okay.
See, you know, at the same time, you wouldn't, like, let's say he was Catholic. You wouldn't call it, like, you know, a Catholic versus Protestant fight. It's a fight between a pastor and a violent offender.
Question two. Same situation. They research the guy, and they find out he's a militant Christian. Would it be given, like, one militant Christian punching the face of a less militant Christian? Do you think it would have gotten as much attention?
I don't think so.
You see, in light of, like, groups like the Atari teenager... No,
Hutari.
Hutari, yeah, okay.
I was an Atari teenager.
Failed Christian terrorist group. They're underground, you haven't heard of them.
They were cosplaying as Christian terrorists, it ended up being, right?
They did try to murder some cops.
Oh, did they? Just, okay.
Unlike Al-Qaeda, these guys are really bad at it.
Fair
this
enough.
Is like the police academy of terrorism.
I just cosplaying as Christian terrorists. I just want to have that trickle in my mind.
And now I have Steve Guttenberg trying to set a car bomb in my head.
to sort of bounce off of what you're saying, though, Sam, I don't think that if you describe yourself as a militant atheist, you're already predisposed to opinions. And I imagine that there is a more than zero.
Yeah.
and you know, way that his atheism has affected this. His attitude towards this guy is probably more negative than it would have been.
Yeah.
However, these things are always complicated. Again, most, like 80% of Americans are Christians.
Why is it complicated?
Well, it's complicated because that's not necessarily what set him off. But okay. I'm saying that it affected it. If I'm going to say that atheism or Christianity or something is the primary motivation for a terrible act,
yeah.
I have to ask questions here.
Okay.
Why did they do this? What set them off?
Yeah.
Like, if this was the other way around, let's just say this was at the CFI thing.
I don't think
thing,
there's a...
Well, hold on.
Okay.
Let's just say we were at the CFI meeting. There's a lot of atheists. Let's say a Christian showed up who was a guest, and someone asked the person if their Christian boyfriend was abusive, and he just straight out attacked him. I don't know necessarily that the Christianity is what made him do it. I mean, there's plenty of Christians in prison for which Christianity had no thing to play into their actual crime.
I think you have to be really careful here, because I've heard you describe in very negative terms Christians who say, well, the situation is complicated, when the situation is not complicated. The situation here is not complicated. A guy said something, and somebody else decided repeatedly punching him in the face was a valid option in response to that statement. There is nothing complex there.
No, I'm just, you know what I'm saying, the complexity is not what he did in there, but I'm saying why. If we're going to put a blame on what the ideological reason that set him off was,
okay.
I don't think we know that answer yet. It could be the atheism. It could be his history of violence. It could be a combination of these things. What I'm saying is that it's probably a very simple thing, okay. But we don't know what that thing is yet.
It's the way you're talking. I kind of know where you're going with this, and I don't entirely disagree.
I'm not trying to say
but I'm feeling I'm sensing what feels like a lot of hand waving here.
No. I don't want to hand wave.
Okay.
What I'm saying is that before we say this is that atheist suicide bomber that we dread will happen,
yeah.
Let's make sure it really is that first. And it's the same thing with like the Boston bombers are a really good example. Right. These are people that we want to hold back. We don't know that it's an Islam thing. We don't know that it's religiously based until we do.
Okay.
And that's what I mean, is that it's easy to jump to conclusions.
That's a much better way to put it. I like that.
And
you
Okay.
Oh, boy. It's okay, so there's going to be Christians out there. There's going to be religious people out there who are going to want two things of us. So I'm going to give those to you right now. What's this guy's name?
James Maxey.
I, Sam Mulvey, atheist, denounce James Maxey and the actions of James Maxey. Two, I am willing, in the face of evidence... I am willing to say that James Maxey is an atheist and may even be an atheist activist and a militant atheist. And this is something that I do that I don't see you guys doing so much. I'm not dodging this. I'm not no true Scotsmaning this. I'm not trying to say he's...
False conversion.
I'm not suggesting that he's not really a true atheist. I'm not suggesting that he was on like some weird variant of atheism that I don't consider atheist. If he didn't believe in God, he's an atheist. We have a lot of that we agree on. And if he punched somebody, then he punched somebody. If he's an atheist who's who's on the sex offender registry, then that's what he is. Mm-hmm. We should not dodge that. We cannot dodge that. Checkmate, I guess.
Yeah.
But every time...
It's still going to be one story that's going to get blown up into proof that we're evil, we're immoral people.
Yeah.
Well, it's the same thing with the Christian media. I don't mean like the mainstream Christian media. No, I mean there is a Christian media, like the Christian Post and things like that, Charisma, those sorts of magazines. There's already a predisposition towards martyrdom that folks want to have. And this is just another way. They're like, see, they're trying to beat us up for being Christian. Where, hold on, we don't know yet because it's a Christian. It might have been very well because this guy was a Christian who made him angry that he punched him.
Yeah.
But it may just be that he doesn't like being accused of being violent.
Yeah, who knows? But I don't really care. Yes, he's an atheist. But there's a story that you tell about when you were in politics, about when there was a platform of people that you didn't like and the way you described it.
Oh, yeah. Are you talking about the this should end with somebody saying live from New York at Saturday Night?
Yes, that story.
Yes. Do you want me to tell that
story? Yes, I do.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, go
ahead. I used to be in the Green Party.
Yeah.
And we used to... The bottom line is this, is that when we ran people for office, some of those people would be crazy. And that was the one thing. And that you wanted to do was to protect non-crazy candidates from crazy people.
Right.
Because, you know... If somebody sees you up there, there are people that are going to look like really, really hard for reasons to disavow you,
right,
and to call you a bunch of kooks. But at the same time, you had the Democratic Party, who would have running in their primary Lyndon LaRouche, who is a crazy political cult leader.
Yeah.
But people don't, when they see Lyndon LaRouche, they don't go, wow, the Democrats are crazy. They go, that guy's a nutball. And I can understand why they don't let him into televised debates. Mm-hmm. However, if the Greens have that guy as their equivalent, they go, the Greens are a bunch of crazy people.
Yeah.
And that was something we regularly encountered. And we had a candidates forum very early on in the 2008 primary. And it was a stage full of crazy people. And it was something I'm like, I don't want anyone of these people near who I would consider a serious candidate.
Right.
And that's why I said that felt like a panel that should have ended with somebody saying live from New York, it's Saturday night.
But I think that the reason I wanted you to tell this story is the important thing is that when the Democrats have a crazy candidate, they say, oh, that candidate is crazy. And then when the Greens have a crazy candidate, people would say the Greens are crazy.
Yeah.
And I think this is what Dave, you're talking about when you say we don't know if atheism has anything to do with
exactly. It's like, and if I mean, nobody, if he was a Christian, no one would ever write this story as a Christian did this because he's Christian, but because he's an atheist and because it involved a pastor, that's the assumption that's going to be made,
right?
And it's frustrating to me because it seems like a false sort of correlation. You know, that you can't just jump on, but that the assumption will definitely be there.
Yeah, absolutely. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we're gonna have an interview with somebody who drove a very long way.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
If you are a humanist, atheist, or freethinker from Everett, Washington to the Canadian border, Humanists of North Puget Sound welcomes you. Your freethought neighbors to the north have been promoting secular ideas for over 20 years. They're humanists, with a rational worldview, informed by science, inspired by art, and motivated by compassion. Join up for monthly conversation, camaraderie, and activism. Humanists of North Puget Sound. Visit humanistsnps.org.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Doran.
And we host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. We invite a rotating panel of our friends over to talk about science fiction, comic books, movies, horror, animation, professional wrestling, video games, and George freaking Lucas.
It's a warts and all look at popular geek culture, where we tip sacred cows and use profanity while arguing about children's entertainment.
Think of it as the McLaughlin Group for nerds.
Find us online at RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
Tacoma Telematics wants to help you connect with your clients. We can give you a top-notch web presence. Tacoma Telematics can take your website to the next level and make it an essential part of your business marketing, but that's not all. Want VoIP? We've got it, bringing large corporation phone systems capability at mom-and-pop prices. We build intuitive interfaces to help you manage your resources quickly and efficiently. Take advantage of our holistic approach to make your business communications succeed effortlessly. At Tacoma Telematics, we're committed to personal and professional integrity, open communication, and long-term relationships. See us at TacomaTelematics.com.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. Joining us now is James Ford, but we're going to have to wait on an introduction because we've got a phone call. Joining us now is Joseph from California, and he's got some questions about evolution. How are you doing today?
Hi there. I had kind of a difficult question. This was actually for another atheist program. They're
okay.
Not on duty right now. They're not on the air, so I guess I just wanted to ask this to this program. I'm sorry if it's not on topic with what you guys were talking about, but basically it's about racism and evolution.
Okay.
If you guys are advocates of evolution.
Right.
Basically, I read up that back about 100 years ago, there were a lot of people, explorers, that went on journeys to kill Aborigine people because Darwin said they were descendants of, like, ape men.
Okay.
No. That, no. No. Well, first of all, where did you read that?
Well, they have, actually, they have a book. And
who's they?
Yeah, they.
No, they. Just, where did you read that?
Wikipedia.
Okay. Right off the bat, that's a little shady. You know that anybody can put anything on Wikipedia, and if I wanted to say that Tom Cruise was a Martian, I could do that right now on my tablet.
Yeah, Wikipedia is not a source. The thing about Wikipedia is that if you look at the bottom, they'll include the actual sources if it's a well-written article. So I would encourage
you. They do have a book and a movie about it.
Okay, that's one thing. Who?
Yeah.
There's a guy. Okay, this is if you want to research the name of the guy that was actually part of this.
Yeah.
His name is Orta Banga. He was brought from Africa over to our country in U.S. and he was put on display in a zoo for people to look at because they thought he was.
Okay. Now we're entering the area of historical fact here. There are a lot of people who saw. Who saw evolution as an explanation for their preconceptions about how humans were set aside. A lot of people saw Darwin's theories as justification for the English case system, for the Indian case system. Yes, there are people who would do that. The difference is these are people who were using these new scientific theories to justify their own terrible social ideas, not really based on the facts. They would cherry pick. This seems to fit. That doesn't seem to fit. That fits. This other thing doesn't fit. But they were just looking for any reason to say in science, in philosophy, to say, I am allowed to maintain these social controls because these fields support me. It really has nothing to do with evolution at all.
I think you could draw a certain connection to stuff that Deepak Chopra does, where he uses scientific language to justify non-scientific pseudoscience.
Yeah.
Well, listen. My question really is, where are blacks and whites from the same age? If they aren't, then isn't that racist?
We're not from apes.
And in regards to what you said, they were killing so many Aborigines that they had to make a law of the state to protect those people.
What does that have to do with evolutionary theory is my question for you.
1904 in Queensland.
What does this have to do with modern evolutionary theory and what scientists say?
Well, if it's true that, you know, if blacks and whites are from different apes, how is
that's not what any scientist says.
No scientist says that.
Sorry, Joseph, I'm confused really quickly here. You had said Aborigines. Are we talking about the United States of America or Australia? This is coming from an ignorant Canadian here. Okay.
Aborigines.
All right.
No, there is no scientist who says that blacks and whites are separate species.
No reputable scientist. There might be some weirdo out there.
Some wackadoo, right-wing.
How did we get different skin color then?
Because you live in different environments. We are all part of the same species, and there's actually greater variation among ethnicities than there are between ethnicities.
And it's why polar bears have got black skin but white fur, and why North American bears generally aren't white. It's no different than that, or snowy owls. They're very similar species. They all came from a common ancestor, just like all of us. And we can see very easily within the same species. It's a bear, but they're different colors for different reasons. I mean, look at hamsters and guinea pigs. They're all different colors. Cats are different colors. And they're all important evolutionary reasons why they form that way. So to suggest simply because a white person and a black person have different color skin that they're clearly different species is completely ignorant. And you should be ashamed of yourself for suggesting that.
So you're saying that because we live in different environments, that was the skin color change, correct?
Yes, it's a difference
in
melanin content.
I believe that's a leading theory. I'm not a specialist on this.
Well,
by
what
any
about
means.
What about the people in Alaska? I believe they're Eskimos. They have brown skin and they've been living there forever.
Well, no. An Eskimo is a dog. You're talking about the Inuit people. You have to understand that there was a thing called a land bridge. At one point, the United Soviet Socialist Republic, which I assume is not what they called it that many hundreds of thousands of years ago, was actually connected to North America, which is why you'll see people in my country, indigenous people in Canada, look very similar to Mongolians that you would find in Asia. It's because they're all descended from that. They moved from Africa into Mongolia and then straight up into Canada.
And they haven't been there forever. It's a very recent migration.
I mean, for example, in my hometown of Saskatoon, indigenous activities have only been documented for the last 6,000 years confirmed. So they haven't been around forever, and evolution is very, very, very slow. So to suggest that you would change your skin color overnight just because it got a bit cold is ridiculous.
Okay, so you're saying that we all came from the same ape. Black.
Well,
black.
Not an ape. Same ape.
Yeah. No, what we're saying is that all life on Earth honestly has a common ancestor, but that ancestor is so far back that human history couldn't possibly touch even a tiny fraction
of it. And I think what he's trying to drive at here is that there was an ape that...
There wasn't a single ape.
Yeah, this wasn't... It's the change of species over time, not necessarily individuals.
Joseph, I'm going to give you a real quick evolution lesson here. Human beings, as we know them today, have only been around for about 200,000 years. That's kind of when we started to evolve. But it's not to say that exactly 200,000 years ago there was someone who was a monkey, and then the next day he mated with another monkey, and then they gave birth to a human being. Evolution doesn't work like that. It's very, very, very gradual. And I hope you can get past the idea that it's not overnight. You have to understand that it's a very, very gradual process.
No problem. I just wanted to address that about the Australian Aborigines. You guys are more than welcome to research that yourself, and thank you for taking my call.
Thank you. I am familiar with that, and the end point of that is it sounds like you're trying to lay that at the feet of evolution. And my point is that these are folks who would take any theory that would support their view of the universe, their view of social control, how they maintain power, and they would employ that no matter what. There's a bunch of pseudoscience that those same groups of people would use to suggest that it was their right to maintain power, just like they used the divine right of kings to suggest that these monarchs should continue to be the monarchs. The science here is not at fault. The social controls established by religious people, the social substrate that we lived with, definitely in Europe back in those days, more their fault than the fault of Charles Darwin. And
it's ridiculous.
Darwin had nothing to do with it.
It's like blaming the Wright brothers for every bomb that's ever been dropped from a plane.
Yeah.
This is simply a technology that allows you to do something. Somebody can either misrepresent it or somebody can use it for poor things. You know, I'm not going to blame Sir Isaac Newton for the bomb dropped on Hiroshima.
Right.
Because that's just the method at which somebody said, hey, if I let go of something and I'm up here, it'll fall down there. It's not saying that, oh, clearly the theory of gravity is evil because look at all the horrible things. Like I stubbed my toe once.
Yeah.
It's just nonsense.
Well, and the phrase, in fact, survival of the fittest, is not Darwin's phrase, and was championed. It didn't necessarily come from those people, but it was championed by people who were trying to keep the social order that they were benefiting from in place. They're saying just because we're at the top, we are the fittest. And that's not what evolution means.
Here's the funny thing with evolution that a lot of people don't seem to get who use that argument, is that there is a top in evolution.
Yeah.
There's just whether a trait gives you the ability to survive longer and make babies or not.
Yeah.
It's not a question of something being superior to something else or something. Like, there's a chart, and somehow I get a gold star if I have X trait.
Yeah.
That trait that helps me survive in this environment might be my downfall in another. And with environmental changes that we've seen over the vast millions of years that life has existed on this Earth, sometimes a gold star in one environment is the reason that you die out in another.
But I think we've all sort of intimated that what he's considering research may not be what we consider research.
No. I think that if I was going to make a recommendation to Joseph, which is instead of looking at Wikipedia for things that will benefit something or reaffirm what he already believes, I'd recommend going to a community college and taking an evolutionary evolutionary biology class.
There's actually, if he wants to stay online, there's great courses online.
Yeah, and I would say scapegoating Darwin for this racism thing is ridiculous. Everywhere in human history, we're going to find people killing people for various reasons. And racism is racism is racism. And if you want to make Darwin responsible for that, or if you want to make Manifest Destiny responsible for that, you can. But racism is still racism.
Racism is racism, and it's people doing it. You know, we can say where they come from. I don't blame our caller for all that stuff. You know, it's racism. It's people being bad to people, and that's always what it is. So I suppose I should introduce you now.
Thanks.
James Ford is a clinical bioethics facilitator and social change activist in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. He joins us after attending the Center for Inquiry Summit here in Tacoma. How are you doing today?
I'm feeling fantastic. It's been a long convention.
It has been a very long convention. We've been sort of... We've been kind of orbiting each other around this and having very short conversations at the summit, and it's been a lot of fun. And the thing that caught my attention immediately, since we're talking about evolution, I think it's the best time to introduce this,
sure,
is you were walking around with a copy of Origin of Species.
That's right. It's a social art project that I had started, and I'll give you a quick background. The first time I did this project was with a copy of the Holy Christian Scripture a few years ago at a Christian conference that I lied, snuck?
Yeah.
Dishonested my way into?
Yeah, okay.
I was there. I was
lied
respectful.
Lied is fine. Yeah.
I asked participants. Sure. So I would hand this copy of the Bible to someone and a pen, and I would say, open it to any page, or a page if you know where this particular lesson is, and I want you to write your name and, in one sentence, the favorite thing you learned in the Bible.
Yeah.
And upon the completion of that project, I concluded that most of them haven't actually read the book.
Yeah.
But with this project, I took a copy of Charles Darwin's The Origin of Species, and I had a big illustrated one that I forgot at home, so this was literally the last copy at the last bookstore in Bellingham, Washington. And I took it to the convention, and I said, here's a pen, here's the book, crack it open, write down your name and, in air quotes here, your place of origin, whatever that means to you. And there have been some really interesting contributions.
So what kind of contributions are you getting?
Everything from Pale Blue Dot to Mother's Womb. Bill Nye signed it, but didn't follow my instructions, and instead provided accolades instead of actually participating in the project.
So where did you, where did you get the idea to do this?
I was in the hospital a number of years ago, and I had, wasn't thinking straight all the time, because meds, a lot of pain meds I was on.
Yeah.
And so I had a guest book that I left at my bedside, and I said, when you come visit me, write down your name. And I had a friend say, well, I'm not a guest. And I said, well, I've invited you to write in the book, so you are a guest of the book. That's why it's called a guest book. And I was looking back on it a few years later, and I looked at all the things people had said, and it sort of gave me this idea, maybe I should start getting people to write in other books. And I did the Bible, and now Origin of Species, and I'm feeling great about the project.
Yeah, the thing I found really interesting about it, because it is an open question, and approaching it rather than just saying, what's the name of your hometown, the way a guest book might.
That's what really drew me to it, too, yeah.
I think the idea of an idea of origin is that there's a much broader question. There's philosophical ways. Where did I come to be the person that I am? Where am I from? You could say, what am I now? Mm-hmm. Where did that come from? Or what I used to be come from? I mean, yeah. There's a lot of ways that you can read that.
So what do you plan on doing with the book?
Well, I made a mistake that was a fortuitous error. Bill Nye had signed on one of the pages, and he picked a page where the text in the book was really dark, and he didn't press very hard on the pen, so it was difficult to read. But my fortunate error is that I had asked everyone to write in blue pen over top of the black text. So I just photographed the page with my BlackBerry. I turned up the blue. I turned down everything else. And I had this really cool neon blue outline of every signature in the book. So I think I might go through photographing one page after another and blogging it. But at any bit, it's a really cool piece of art that I can hold in my hand and put on my shelf next to a Bible with a bunch of people who haven't read it.
Unwittingly, I think I referenced my origin twice when I signed it, because, you know, I put my name on it, and then I'm listening to your talk, and I'm like, you know, what you consider your origin, and the first thing I said was, well, Earth, I guess. I'm like, you know what? That's really it. So I just put Earth, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And I did it on page 187, which, despite what you may think, I use because that was my first user number on God's Country, which was a diversity dial in the Chicago area, which was a bunch of 300 baud modems connected to an Apple II, and you'd talk to each other. And
so 187, that's pretty gangsta.
Yeah, and that's what everybody thinks, but it was actually my first user number. And if you're talking about sort of intellectual origins, God's Country would kind of be it in a lot of ways. And it just later on, I'm walking around to the conference and listening to you give the spiel. I was like, I actually put my origin down twice without even thinking about it. So when we introduced you, we introduced you as a
clinical bioethics facilitator.
Clinical bioethics facilitator. Yeah. I'm trying to figure out how to ask a question about that, but I can't. So what is a clinical bioethics facilitator?
Okay, well, for example, your grandmother is very ill. She's in intensive care on life support. And there's a meeting that's called with members of the care team, doctors, nurses, and her family. And they have to decide what they're going to do with your grandmother.
Yeah.
And some poor unfortunate soul has to lead that meeting, and that's me.
Okay, so you actually deal with what a lot of us think about as what we think about as hypotheticals when we discuss healthcare in this country. You actually deal with on a retail person-to-person basis.
Exactly. Well, and I worked at a funeral home before I jumped out of that and went into healthcare. So I've seen it the 20 hours after the event, and then the 20 minutes before.
Yeah.
So it's come full circle, but I absolutely adore my job, and I love people who are just about to die. They're very honest. They're the only honest people.
Yeah. So, wow. That's
really.
I what you say is meaningful and depressing at the same time. Well, yeah. Meaningful.
There's
things
a little
are
touch of
depressing.
Scary to it too. Yeah. The idea is that unless you know I'm talking to someone who's say terminally ill, that everything that we're interacting with could be a lie.
Yeah. What the heck am I going to lose?
Well, we're all liars to some extent. I think we're all afraid of the things that we don't say. I mean,
yeah.
There's a number of people I don't tell off at work, but yeah. I work in retail.
Yeah, I try to be I try to be honest about this, but a lot of times I'll just say I'm a liar full stop.
Yeah.
Because we all do.
We have a protocol in place for when people admit to murder. Deathbed confessionals. We have a form.
A form?
We have a form to fill out, yeah.
On the box if it was...
I'm sorry, sir, but we have some paperwork.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow.
Do you fill it out or does a confessed murderer fill it out?
No, they're dead.
Oh, they're already dead.
Yeah,
okay.
It's like the last words kind of thing.
Oh.
I have a series of songs that I've been writing. I'll take with the consent of the patients and or their families, if applicable, the last few words they've spoken before they pass away, and I'll use that generally as the chorus line to a song I'll compose on my ukulele, usually in my car, in the parking lot on my break.
You're like a Wes Anderson character.
Yeah. I do like the juxtaposition of someone's final words and a ukulele.
No, sometimes they're pretty funny.
Okay. You see, that's what I want. Is that, I'd like, you know, if I could, I would...
Oh my God, it's full of stars?
Yeah. Or, hang on, I'll be right back. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480, your backup source for questions on evolution. Hang on, I'll be right back.
Out of the briny depths of the internet comes a comic book podcast so powerful they cannot be contained by a single continent. Mike and Paul, save the universe!
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Paul Root.
If you're an unsatisfied comics fan, we want to help you find better comics.
And if you've never picked up a comic before in your life, we want to help you find what could be your new favorite thing.
On Mike and Paul Save the Universe, we love the bejesus out of comics, and so should you.
Find us online at mikeandpaul.com.
Billy! I am the Queen of England. You must give me your lunch money.
Why?
Because it'll explode.
I don't know.
I'm the Queen of England. I know things.
Well, that makes sense. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because an authority says it doesn't make it true. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I'm melting!
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
Psst. Hey. I know that we all slip up sometimes, but not knowing your STD status at all, not a smart move. Did you know that STDs can even be transmitted through oral sex alone? Yeah, worried yet? With STDHomeTestKit.com, everything you need is shipped to you, where you'll have results in the comfort of your own home in less than 10 minutes. Be certain of your status with STDHomeTestKit.com.
If you enjoy the programming we create on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship keeps our show in the air and improves the quality of our broadcasts. Don't make us beg. Please go to askanatheist.tv and contribute today.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist 253-584-1480. No, I did not die during the break. One of the things that we were talking about in the run-up to this episode is the hospital that you work for.
Right. Well, I'm... As of right now, officially not at that hospital anymore.
Okay.
I moved on for the reasons I think we're about to discuss.
Okay.
The Canadian healthcare system is different than this in the States, and I know you've got a couple Edmonton listeners who I don't have to fill on this. Within the province of Saskatchewan, we've got a few different health regions that are funded by the government and they're locally controlled, funded by the provincial government and locally right. controlled. The Saskatoon health region is the largest of them, and within the city of Saskatoon, there are three hospitals. Two of them are public, and one of them is Catholic. But the way it works is that St. Paul's Hospital, which was the site I was at, and the only palliative care site in Saskatoon, which is important and troubling, is run by an independent organization. It's the Catholic Health Association of Saskatchewan, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And then the sort of the way doctors' fees works, the Saskatoon Health Region will pay money to St. Paul's Hospital in exchange for offering these services. The services, though, come with a caveat, and that is there will be a crucifix above your bed, in your room, in the operating room, in the MRI room, everywhere you go.
Yeah, I'm not too keen on that.
No, when I had my face explosion last year,
were an extra in scanners.
Yes, I was an extra in scanners. I had to go to St. Joe's just up the street, and yeah, there's a crucifix there, and I'm like, can you get rid of that? I'm like, no, it's glued up there.
It's glued. You gotta chisel that.
And I'm like, I might try and get rid of it anyway. Like, yeah. I wouldn't do that. Your face will explode. I'm like, all right, fine.
I don't know how people get comfort. I could get the cross to some extent, but the crucifix has an practically half-naked executed guy on it.
When I'm going in for my open heart surgery, I want to see a guy being executed.
Well, the interesting thing is, though, is the way folks there will dismiss it. Because they'll say, you realize, yes, there's a crucifix in the room. And I'll say, doesn't that make you feel uncomfortable? Well, no. Well, why not? Well, it's a Catholic hospital. Okay, but does the fact that the test you're having is only available at this hospital, palliative care is only available at this hospital, there are renal care is only available at this hospital, so if you have one of these conditions that only the Catholics can treat, you're stuck with that crucifix, and that's it. And if you don't want the crucifix, too bad, you die.
So there's a thing here, is in Washington State, we're kind of a watch area right now because there's a lot of Catholic takeovers of hospitals here,
right.
And now there's places... huge swaths of Washington where the only hospitalization care you can get is from a Catholic institution. And in the United States, Catholic institutions won't do some things that you can get at other places.
Or won't inform you of things.
And just won't inform you. And it's not real hospital care when they don't tell you all their options, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, and we have other smaller Catholic hospitals in the region. For example, there is no rural access to abortion in Saskatchewan because the only rural hospitals are religious hospitals.
Right.
Which should be illegal and is technically a violation of the Canada Health Act, which requires universality and open access.
And that's sort of what I'm wondering is you know, we're talking in here in Washington State, we're talking about end-of-life care and end-of-life care with all the options on the table and a fully informed patient. And when you were talking about it, you're talking about crucifixes on the wall, which I think is an important thing.
It is.
But there does seem to be a difference there. And one of the biggest differences is in palliative care.
Right.
So what are the differences? Are you aware of any differences between palliative care here and palliative care there as regards to Catholic hospitals?
Palliative care is almost the exclusive territory of the Catholics. I think just about everywhere you find a Catholic hospital, that's where your palliative care unit's going to be. What does disturb me, though, is that the person who's – there are two in the Saskatoon Health Region, bioethics – or bioethicists, and they're the people who have the final decision. They are God, the life and death people.
Yeah.
And the one responsible for bioethics in palliative care is a practicing Catholic,
right,
who specifically does not believe in doctor-assisted dying, which is something that I think everyone in a civilized society should be pushing for, and we're not going to get it because the person responsible for making those decisions is religiously opposed to it. And I think that's a really interesting conflict of interest, and it disturbs me.
And I know we've seen situations before in hospitals where, like in Ireland recently, where a woman died in a completely preventable situation because she was denied an abortion, and that's a situation that could come before a hospital that you used to work at.
It will at some point. It will. Right now, all the abortion services in the city are provided at one of the two public hospitals. But it's scary because we wonder, in palliative care, what's going to happen. And that
right.
It needs to be run secularly. Has to be.
Hmm. Okay. We do have another phone call, and this is an interesting one. It's one we haven't talked about in a while. Got Emmett from Canada, and he's got a question about ancient aliens seeding life on Earth. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Well, according to Zacharias Titchen.
Oh, you're not starting off strong here.
Can you hear me?
No, yeah. I'm saying that you're not off to a strong start.
I didn't catch that.
He said, according to Zacharias Titchen.
Okay, well, let him ask his question. I want to hear this.
Yeah, go ahead.
Is that like Stephen Crichton? He read Jurassic Park?
All right, your question, sir.
Okay, according to this writer, which is named Zacharias Titchen, he wrote some books that provide a rational explanation concerning the origin of the human race.
Mm-hmm.
And he translated some Sumerian tablets that prove that the human race was started by ancient aliens.
Prove. Proof is used very weakly here.
I'm not really familiar with these guys, but it sounds like you guys are.
The familiarity I've had with these...
I started just reading about it like a few days ago.
Yeah, I'm sorry to throw some pee on your parade there, but the truth is Zacharias Sitchens is not a respected historian. He's someone who looks at ancient art and simply assumes that all the fairy stories about the gods, like Quetzalcoatl, are all true, but says that this is actually a picture of a spaceship. The basic claim is this is either seeding the human race or usual ancient aliens claptrap. I'm sorry, Emmett, but there's really nothing.
He's an art critic. He's not a scientist by any measure or definition at all. And I would say maybe pick a different book, honestly, because you're wasting your time with that one. It's probably not all that exciting. Shoot for the Bible. Actually, read that cover to cover, and then let's talk to you again.
There are people who have thrown out as sort of a minority theory about the origins of life on Earth. It's the panspermia theory, but the prevailing theory there is that life on Earth was seeded by comets rather than aliens came up and beamed people onto Earth.
Yeah, bacteria on a meteorite or something.
I also have to say again that is a minority opinion currently. That the prevailing opinion is that life on Earth began on Earth.
Yeah, this is not Battlestar Galactica.
Right.
I would say, honestly, read in places other than the New Age section of the bookstore.
Thank you very much for your call, Emmett.
All right, thank you.
Thanks. Oh.
Yeah, that's in the same section as, what's that other guy, Edgar Cayce, who thinks he's like reincarnated from...
Yeah, see, if we were talking about Edgar Cayce, I could get into that, but
yeah,
this other guy...
Sitchens is just a crackpot. I mean, there's nothing there that's of any value.
Can we talk really briefly about... end-of-life traditions.
Yes.
Based on faith and secularism. Sure. I have an observation, and I've done palliative long enough to sort of figure this out, and I'm very, very careful about keeping my unbelief to myself at work, so
right.
No one would ever assume that I was an atheist. It occurs to me that the folks who are most excited about dying well before that moment of death comes are religious folk. They're going to be reunited with their families. They're going to get to walk with Christ. It's going to be awesome. Like it's something we shouldn't be afraid of. It's something we should embrace. This is a really good thing. But it's been almost my almost universal observation that the most terrified people in the moments before death are the faithful. And having watched Catholics and Baptists and Jews die on one side of the hallway and atheists on the other, I can say the ones most comfortable with death, absolutely, are atheists.
And
why do you think that is?
I think because we don't have a test coming up the next day. I mean, because what they're expecting is they're going to die.
Judgment.
Yeah. And then they're going to go, okay, here's all... it's basically going to be the worst reality show ever. Mm-hmm. They're going to go on stage, and every bad thing that, you know, the time they stole a candy bar when they were five, the time they accidentally pooped on the floor because the toilet was broken, they're going to have to see all of that again. Where I'm just going to go, hey, catch you later, lights out, and I don't even notice that the lights are out, because I'm not.
Well, the judgment aspect is there, that you don't know if I'm going to get into Valhalla or Nirvana or Heaven, or I'm going to break the cycle of samsara, or whatever your appropriate end-of-life mythology is. I think we go into it saying, this is the end.
Yeah.
It's over now, curtains. And I think that perhaps on one hand, there's a fear of that that's in every person, because even somebody who believes that they're going to be reunited with Christ,
right,
you know, they still look both ways when they cross the street. They still hesitate before running into a burning building.
But this is the weird thing. This is the stuff that I get a lot from religious people is, you know, I get to go into death satisfied that I'm going to be spending an eternity with my Lord. And I've kind of taken them at their word on that.
Right.
But that's not what you're saying.
No, not at all. Because it's having talked to the dying a lot. And this is the other part of my job is holding your hand when you take your last breath.
Okay.
When your family's not strong enough or not able to be there, someone's got to be there to tell the nurse when you've finally died, and that's my job.
Okay.
And those last conversations are almost never about religion, even with the most religious people. It's like when you've come that far, whether it's the Versed and the Dilaudid in your system or the Diamond Hydronate, we don't talk about religion. That's not the last conversation. I mean, you could be a bishop, and I've cared for bishops in their last minutes, and religion is never, ever the topic. It's, is this going to hurt? What's it going to be like? And I don't know. I haven't been dead.
Yeah.
I mean, no one really gets to talk about that. But,
right.
But religion is never the last conversation.
That's honestly surprising to me. Because for me, I kind of wonder. It's like, it seems like if I'm going to die soon, I would start kind of reflecting. It's like, okay,
I think that's the time to pray if ever there was one,
right? Yeah. And for religious people, it seems like prayer would be the thing to do. And in fact, especially in Catholic hospitals, isn't there like a hokey pokey they gotta do that when they're gonna die?
There's a bit of a hokey pokey. I mean, not everyone is subjected to the hokey pokey. You have to request the Catholic hokey pokey.
Okay.
And they have different spiritual counselors, and when they request a secularist or someone to talk to, it's usually me getting tapped on the shoulder.
Well, right.
Well, we know you're an atheist, maybe you're gonna give them talk
don't
to
tell
them.
No one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think it's because we've given up, and it's nice. And that's, we're all the same when we're born, and we're all the same in the moment before death. I think
right.
Those are the two unifying things. And I think when you get to that point, when you know it's over, if you're going to be saved, you're going to be saved already. If not, it's too damn late. What are you going to do? And so I think you just want to talk to that other human being and just talk about, you can't talk about birth. No one remembers it.
Yeah.
But I can talk to you about what's going to happen to you in the next hour.
Right.
And that's the most powerful conversation you can have with someone, and it's never religious.
We've on the show, we've actually decided for a while to stop talking about death because it was the only thing that anybody would ever ask us about.
Right.
And we never had anything to add to that question. It's like, well, what are you going to do when you die? Well, probably die. And then what happens? Nothing.
There's so many ways to answer that question, too.
Because it's intensely personal.
There is intensely personal.
And no one knows. That's the one thing we can agree on, is what happens. Don't know.
That's the thing that people want from us, is I think they want a comforting lie.
Yeah.
But
that's the only thing atheism doesn't deliver, is the comforting lie. That's kind of the good thing we've got going, is we don't lie.
Yeah.
That you just, you know, I can't tell you what's going to happen, but I'm going to be here when it does.
Yeah.
And I can say that would be more comforting to me.
Yeah.
Than somebody who, you know, tells me about, you know, getting fitted for wings, because it's like, that's a bunch of bull, and I don't believe it for a minute.
The most comforting thing you can say to someone just before they lose the ability to communicate is, well, my break's in 15 minutes, but I'll postpone it. I'll stick around until you're gone.
Here's the thing, is that you're providing, well, the second part of what I was saying is that you're providing information here, stuff I never really considered, stuff I didn't know, because...
Well, and the other thing is, they say, you know, what's the last thing that'll happen? And it's your hearing is the last thing to go. We've stuck dying people in MRIs, and the part of their brain that processes speech is the last thing that goes. So when you're standing at the bedside and someone's completely comatose and you say, well, he's not looking too good, shh, he can hear you.
And that's really a thing?
Yes. Yeah. Wow. So you can keep talking to a person long after they have the ability to feel that you're holding their hand. That's why you always talk to people when they're dying.
Oh, wow.
It's good for them. It's good for you.
I wish I knew that a few years ago.
Sorry, were you talking smack about a dying person?
No, I wasn't saying anything. And I'm like, well, if they can't tell that I'm in the room...
Oh, yeah, they know. They can hear you.
Because I'm not talking, I'm kind of a jerk.
the other thing is, what do we talk about? Hey, so how about that pulse?
Yeah. How's the cancer going?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I guess not good. Huh?
So I guess you don't get to find out how Lost ends.
Yeah. No, man, just talk about the weather of the local sports team. That's what people want.
Okay, yeah. I think I could have talked about the Cubs. That
I think something comforting is something that they know.
No, I needed something not depressing. So not
something
the Cubs.
Something not depressing. But, yeah. I mean, that's the thing, is I just want to have a brief relationship with somebody just as a fellow human at that moment. I don't want them to try to sell me real estate in heaven.
And this is, so, okay, real rate change. But this is why I like conferences, because chance meetings like this. This has been a fantastic hour. Thank you very much for being here. I hope to have you on the show again sometime.
You guys have been great, and I'll be back in 2 years. If you're still kicking, I'm on.
I'm hoping to be kicking. I'm certainly working at it. This is Ask an Atheist. You can go to our website at askanatheist.tv. You can give us a voicemail at 206-420-0997, or you can email us at questions@askanatheist.tv. My name is Sam. With me was Mike Gillis, Dave Roulette, and...
James Ford,
yes. And there is no post-show today because I am exhausted. I'm going to go pass out, and I might wake up in time for next week's show. See you then.